Warning: the following episode of Warcity's Uncensored Mind contains explicit language and adult content. The thoughts and opinions stated on the show are reflective of AJ Orsini and his guests exclusively. But seriously, guys, the show is called Uncensored. If you got a problem with bad language, I really don't give a shit.
It's so boring!
How does that work? Where does that expression come from? It doesn't make any sense.
Make it stop!
Oh, it doesn't make sense. Life doesn't make sense. You know, Wade, you know, look at me. You're a fierce warrior. Happy go lucky guy.
Damn it, Wade!
Welcome to Orsini's Uncensored Mind, and now your host, AJ Orsini.
How the hell is everybody out there? This is your boy. This is your main man, your host of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. I am AJ Orsini, and I bequeath onto all of you who are listening to me right now through all of those pleasurable platforms that all of you are listening to. I bequeath onto all of you episode 77, and I, my friends, am wearing the battle scars. I am wearing the badges of honor right now, all across my chest and my swollen arms here, because I'm always swole all the time. No matter what my weight situation, my arms are always jacked to the gills here. I am wearing my badges of honor because I have been through the wars, my friend. I have spent the last few days, nigh late of a week, battling those evildoers, those haters, if you will, on the Fabi book and the tweets and the IGs. I have been, not the IGs, I'm actually pretty amicable on the IG networks, but the Facebook wars have commenced. And I have been battling day after day, status after status, my own status, other people's statuses. It has been a brouhaha here on the interwebs when it comes to several topics. So much fighting, in fact. More fighting for me than usual. But so much fighting, in fact, that I almost felt for a second, just for a second, like I was completely worn out on certain topics. But alas, my friends, as all real men do, I have found a second wind and I have got yet another load. One more nut to give, and I'm going to give all of that to you all over your beautiful faces here. We are going to come together and figure out a solution for some of these problems that ail us here in the pro wrestling world. I, of course, am the host of all things pro wrestling related. I have not used that name in quite a while, but boy, do I feel like that now. Oh boy, more than ever do I ever feel like that. Actually, it's funny because when I was using that tagline, your host for all things pro wrestling related, I wasn't really doing a whole lot of other pro wrestling related things other than my job, which I think at the time was a ring announcer, so I wasn't really much of a host of anything. As I mentioned before in earlier episodes, I used to be a co-host of another podcast. That's really where that name started, but that podcast did not last long. That, of course, was my podcast with my old running buddy there, Eric Jaden, who's doing his own thing now with the Deadly Saiyan Squad over here in the New York area. If you didn't have a chance to check him out, he's pretty dope. Really cool guy. Great work. But that was where the whole thing started. So I haven't really used it in a while, but boy, do I really feel like that right now. I feel like your host for all things pro wrestling because I feel like I have to be the leader here. I have to, I was going to say voice of the voiceless, but that's a little running to the ground at this point. I want to be the voice of all those who have voices or do not have voices. Too long to go on a t-shirt, but the catchphrase stays the same here. I feel the need to shine some light. I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to drag you kicking and screaming in any particular direction. I like having conversation. I've had a load of it to the point where obviously the conversation was so good it kept me, because normally once people start figuring out how wrong they are, they start getting all pissy and tantrum me, and they start doing all kinds of stupid shit. I have not run into too much of that. I actually said thank you on one of my previous statuses because the conversation got really heavy, really personal, but it never got over the top. And those are the best conversations where you can get down and gritty and share some experiences and call people out on their shit without people getting into a, you know, menstruation-y kind of attitude problem. They could just take it on the chin like a true pro. Like all those women that I see on my internets whenever I get lonely or whenever I get tired about things. I love to see people debate. I love to see people have conversation because I think that's where people genuinely tend to learn. I think those are the moments in life when people really get to fucking learn. When they hear it from other fucking people. The problem is some people don't want to hear it from other people. They take their personal experiences and pretty much make that the blanket slate of information. I experienced this. This is what it is. And that's not the way life works, unfortunately. There's billions of people on this planet, everybody with their own personal preferences and experiences. It is always good to learn from other people. Always. There's never a situation where, I promise you, where any one person on this planet knows more about something than the other. There's always someone around the corner who's going to know a little bit more, who's going to be a little bit faster, who's going to be a little bit stronger. All right, who's going to be a little quicker on the gun there than you are. So you need to be ready for that. So that's why I always carry myself like the way I do. And I tell people all the time, I have no problem with discussion. I have no problem with conversation. I have a problem with bullshit tantrums. That's a quick one-way ticket to Block City, baby. That's a quick turnaround. I don't fuck around with that. I don't sit here and warn people they're going to be blocked. I don't, none of that shit. You start acting stupid, I block you. You can figure out from there, I guess, on your own or not. Most people just genuinely don't seem to care. The rationale usually for people who get blocked is, I was getting too real for them. No, you were just being an idiot. And I don't deal well with idiots. I just block that. Yeah, you know, no one on the planet, I promise you, no one on the planet, there isn't one that can be too real for me. I'm sorry. I listen to people talk and debate and conversate all the fucking time with some real shit. Shit that'll fuck your mind up. The kind of shit where you have to think about it yourself when you say to yourself, man, that's some really cool shit. You have to really start conversating to yourself about how cool some of the shit is that they're saying. That's real conversation. When you can get someone enlightened, when you can get someone to the point where they're listening to you and they're totally 100% into what you're saying, to the point where they're listening and they usually tend to repeat it to someone else, either as their own knowledge or just something that they heard along the way. That's when you've really truly reached someone. That's when you're really being real with someone. Being an asshole is not being real. That's just the fact of the matter. Oh, I was being too real for him. Nope, you were being a douche, and douches get ignored. If you were being real, I'd want to hear your conversation. That's how that goes. Real people who have something real to say, yeah, I want to hear what you have to say. I pay more attention when it's real. When it's douchey, when it's pretentious, when it's bullshit, I don't have time to hear that. So you get blocked. You get taken out of the circle. You're gone. So you people really need to learn the difference. But I didn't really, like I said, I didn't really run into too much of that this week. So what are some of the topics that we talked about this week that I quote-unquote had these battles and these wars with? Well, let's start with our major WWE pay-per-view that just took place last week. I ran down some of the matches that were going to be taking place. I wasn't really enamored with the matches before. I got to tell you, I wasn't really enamored with them after the fact. But let's go into some of them because some of them we really need to get into. Absolutely, really, absolutely need to get into. So, Elimination Chamber 2019, this took place this past Sunday. So, we're going to run through, again, I don't do reactions and I don't do play. I don't do play-by-play here. We're not going match-by-match, all right? If you want to know who won the match, head over to the network or Google it or whatever the fuck, but I was not surprised that, once again, the Cruiserweight Championship on the pre-show. That was a really good match, actually. Let's skip the chambers for a second. Let's keep the chambers for last, because to be honest with you, that is kind of where the focus should be here. The Usos won their, I think it's sixth tag team championship, SmackDown Tag Team Championship. And I know a lot of people were freaked out, and they were like, well, the Usos should be in trouble, and this guy got pulled over, and blah, 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 blah. Listen. I find it hilarious. I do. I laugh. I find it hilarious when other people make the mistake And it's really quick to be like, well, he should be punished. But yet, that same person who will tell you that that person should be punished for their mistake, should they make the mistake, they would want completely different treatment. Completely. No one who does what Jimmy did looks back and says, well, please forgive me. I was out of my mind there. That was pure, unadulterated anger, what took place with Jimmy Uso. And we're not going to get into the details of that, but there's so much more we need to get to, because this is not the first time an Uso has been arrested for something involving a car and police. Now, I just want to clear one thing up about the controversy with that, because everyone keeps saying DUI, DUI, DUI. He was not arrested for a DUI. Jimmy was not driving the car. Was he intoxicated? Was he drunk? Yes, but he was not driving the car. His wife was driving the car, and his wife was sober. How do I know she was sober? She went home. That's how I know she went home. That's how I know she was sober. Had she been drinking? From what I understand, from the articles that I've read about the arresting officer's comments, the arresting officer had stated he pulled the car over with the car because the car was going on the wrong way on a one-way street. The car looked lost, okay? But the car was essentially going down the wrong way. So the cop pulled her over, or pulled the vehicle over, and went over to the window, started talking to Naomi, and asked Naomi to vacate the vehicle. It was at that point where the officer states that he smelled alcohol in the vehicle, he visibly saw alcohol in the vehicle, which is why he asked Naomi to exit the vehicle. Jimmy took exception to this. Jimmy comes out of the car, takes his fucking shirt off, starts squaring up with the fucking cop, like he's gonna fight this fucking guy. That's why he was arrested. Douchebaggery took place. That's why he was arrested. He did something stupid, okay? That's why he was arrested and released immediately, because he never actually assaulted the cop. He threatened the cop, at which point the cop states that he removed his taser from the holster because he feared for his life, as well he should have. He didn't want to go to the Uso penitentiary, and why would he want to, right? But Jimmy eventually got calmed down to a degree to where he followed the cop's commands, and eventually they arrested him because he did make threats toward a police officer. But that's what we're talking about. He did something stupid. There's no denying that. But he didn't fucking kill anybody. He didn't run anybody to fuck over. He wasn't even driving the fucking car. The person driving the car was sober as shit. So for all you people who are like, I don't understand why these celebrities drive around drunk. You got money. Get someone to drive you. He did get someone to drive him. His fucking spouse drove him. He didn't get arrested for DUI. He didn't get arrested for being drunk. He got arrested. Well, first of all, I'm sure they got a summons or a ticket for having the open container in the vehicle. But that's not an arrestable offense. That's not why he was arrested. He was arrested because he verbally and physically attempted to assault a police officer. That's why. He did something stupid, all right? And if for all intents and purposes, should he have been disciplined? Perhaps. Perhaps. But like all of you know, and you guys have got to stop living in this world where you don't acknowledge this as the truth. When you're that talented in life, you get more breaks than the other guy. This is life. It has always happened this way. So please stop with the sobbing and the song and dance about how it's unfair that he gets to. They are the best tag team in WWE, barring maybe one or two other teams. They're valuable, especially with AEW around the corner. There's a lot of people discussing right now possibilities of if the WWE doesn't work out, they can go there, they can go to New Japan. The whole indie scene is starting to pick up a little bit more with internet service providers and streaming services. I mean, Evolve, MLW, we're talking, there's a market out there for talent like the Usos is what I'm trying to get at here, okay? And right now, WWE is on the precipice of doing something huge. We're broadcast television and the Fox deal. They're still trying to keep their subscription numbers up on the WWE network, so competition will cut into that. They need their heavy hitters. And drunk officer fighting or not, the Usos are heavy hitters. They need to stay. So, vis-a-vis the fucking tag titles. Now, let's be real. If the Usos were facing a real tag team who were defending the tag team championship, perhaps they would not have won. But this is the storyline between The Miz and Shane McMahon. The plan was never to keep the belts on them a long time anyway. They were dropping the belts tonight regardless. The main storyline between Shane and Miz needs to continue on. Thus, the tag titles have to come off. So it was a circumstance, a whirlwind of just bad luck and good luck all at the same time, all swirled together. Had the Usos been in any other position than the one that they were in right before this shit happened, the punishment or whatever the case may have been with the Usos might have been a little different. Had this happened, we're also creeping into WrestleMania season, which is where they're going to need the Usos more than ever. Had this happened, I don't know, May or September, would we be having a different conversation? Probably. During those down periods, maybe. Maybe we would be having a different conversation. Maybe they would have been punished a little bit harder. But they weren't, because the timing was absolutely excellent for them. And they walk away with the Tag Team Championship. Speaking of opportunity here, handicap match, Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush defending the Intercontinental Championship almost as a tandem, even though Lashley's coming in champion. Finn Balor wins out on that. I'm happy about the fact that Finn has the Intercontinental Championship. Finally, something around his waist. The belt looks great on him. We're going to get some quality matches for the Intercontinental Championship coming up next few months or so that's dope. I can actually see Finn and Bobby doing it a couple more times because, you know, you gotta give the former champion a title match, even though I thought that was archaic and, you know, we didn't need that anymore. But Finn Balor is the Intercontinental Championship, and of course, this past Raw, we got some call-ups. We'll talk about that a little later, but we got some call-ups. And Ricochet teaming it with Finn Balor, that could be something. I would love to see those two at WrestleMania. And no, I don't want it in a ladder match. I saw that a bunch of times. They didn't make that a ladder match. They do not. Those two can go in there and put on a nice little matchup without the use of fucking ladders. I don't need ladders in that match. The Raw Women's Championship was a squash match, essentially. Ronda Rousey defeating Ruby Riott by submission, 1:40, folks. Now, they rematched this the next night on Raw, and it was a pretty dope match. But I cannot explain to you why they didn't do it on the main show. I don't know why. I guess they needed more time for all that gaga with Becky Lynch, which, again, we will... Actually, you know what? No, we're not going to get to it later. The next match, Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman, really, who gives a shit? Let's talk about Ronda Rousey, Ruby Riott for just a second, because I think this is just me giving my opinion here. I think the reason why that match wasn't a match is because I think that match would have taken away from what was going to happen after the fact. I think the planned segment there was the after Ruby Riott stuff. Ruby Riott was a filler. That's all she was. Everyone knew it. It was basically advertised as such. So here's, if you didn't get a chance to see it, here's kind of how this went down. Ronda Rousey defeats Ruby Riott pretty much 1:40, like I said. At the end of this match, before this match took place, Charlotte Flair came out. Quick promo, hangs out ringside to watch the Ronda Rousey matchup. Ronda goes, that's why it was 1:40 now that I'm thinking about it now, because I think it was a show of strength toward Charlotte, but... Ronda has the match, defeats Ruby Riott, stares over at Charlotte. That gives Charlotte the indication, okay, I'm going to go and face down with this chick. Charlotte gets into the ring. They do their usual goofy face-off, yada, yada, yada. And all of a sudden, through the crowd, through the mist, through the fire, comes Hellfire herself, the last kicker, the man, Becky Lynch, on crutches, walking to the ring ever so gently. Why is she on crutches? I'm glad you asked, because... they skimmed right by it really fucking fast earlier. If you blink, you missed it. Apparently at a house show, Becky, who was supposed to be suspended for 60 days, decided the very week she got her suspension to show up to a house show and attack Charlotte Flair, at which point Charlotte essentially beat the shit out of her, which is why she's on these crutches. They glossed over that really quickly. Anywho, yes, so she's on these crutches. She gets in the ring. The three of them are staring down. Problem number one. Charlotte just beat the fuck out of this bitch, like, a few days ago, which is why she's on the crutches. Why in the fuck are you just staring at this bitch and mocking the crowd? Because the crowd's popping hard for her. Charlotte's mouthing over to the camera, mouthing in front of the audience, this is your favorite, this is your choice. Why are you even engaging in this conversation? You know she's going to attack you. She just attacked you a few days ago. She attacked you the last time she fucking saw you. There's a graphic, a gif going around all over the place of her getting a clean punch into your fucking chin. Every single time you turn around, this chick gets you. You got the upper hand on her a few days ago. Why aren't you stomping this bitch out right where she stands? I don't understand that. Not only you, but why is Ronda even entertaining the idea of two of her worst enemies in the ring at the same time against her? I get it. Baddest woman on the planet. Sure. She just tore apart the Riott Squad the other day. That's fine. Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan is not Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch. These are two, quote-unquote, arch rivals of yours, and you're just fucking standing around. That was huge for me. They just fucking stood there for forever. And out of nowhere, Becky attacks first. Becky takes the crutch, breaks it over to the... Not even break. I'm going to get to that. Didn't even break. Sledges her in the back. Charlotte hits the ground, and Becky starts to lay that shit in, brother. Let me tell you something. Becky swung that shit like a goddamn maniac. She swung that shit like Manny Machado is going to swing his fucking bat around for the Padres. She swung for the motherfucking fences. For everybody who is giving shit about Charlotte's selling, fuck you. If you've never been hit with a fucking crutch, I will tell you, you need time, okay? Look at every crutch situation you ever see. You hit the crutch once, boom. You give them a few seconds, let them get that sell in, and then boom. There's a methodical pace to it. She swung that motherfucker 0.02 seconds every fucking swing. She beat on this bitch for real. We had cuts, bruises, all kinds of shit. She was just fucking swinging. And you can see it on Charlotte's face. She mouthed a few. You can see her mouth a few times. And go fuck shit. Like this is for real. I'm sure the idea was to make it look as real as possible. Because let me tell you something. Based on everything that took place, okay, this looked super real and it looked super realistic. And I bought into it 100%. It looked good from a camera aspect, it looked good. From a story aspect, it looked good. After she hits on Charlotte, she gives the tease to Ronda, you know, almost like handing her a crutch. Yeah, why don't you go ahead and why don't you get your piece? Because you know that you owe Charlotte for Survivor Series, right? Here you go. And for a split second, Ronda, you know, Ronda to her credit, she thought about it. She thought she could. She thought about it. She thought about getting a little measure of revenge there. And then kapow! Becky puts the other crutch into this bitch's back and goes off on Ronda Rousey. Ronda goes down. Now, this is the worst of the two. She clocked Ronda right on the top of the fucking skull and cracked her fucking wide open. She's bleeding down inside of her fucking face. Now, the goal of this, I'm sure, was we want to make Becky look like a badass. Okay? I'm sure that was the plan. We're going to make her look like a complete 100% badass. And not for nothing, it wasn't that far off the mark. The only real problem I had with the entire thing is it's completely unrealistic how it all went down. Now, all people keep talking about is the comparisons between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Becky Lynch. And from an organic point of view, I get it. But these two characters are nowhere near the fucking same. And it's unfair to Becky, really, to be compared to that, because it's just setting the bar way too fucking high. There'll never be another fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin. There just won't be. There'll never, just like there was never another Hogan, there was never another Macho, there was never another Bruno Sammartino. Some people are just timeless for the time periods in which they performed. Stone Cold Steve Austin was one of a kind. Okay, we need to stop making the comparisons to Stone Cold Steve Austin, because to be honest with you, it's not doing Becky any fucking favors at all whatsoever. I will tell you this, Stone Cold Steve Austin doing that exact segment would have looked, felt, and been done a whole lot different than the one they did for Becky Lynch. And I think that's why it's unfair to compare, because they can't do it with Becky the way they did it with Steve. I'll give you an example. All we saw was Becky come through the crowd on her crutches, through a segment of the barricade that was already opened, to the ring, sliding into the ring like any hobbled person would do. She was faking it, but she still legitimately has a knee injury, right? You know, kayfabe. She gets in, slides into the ring, has ample amount of time to stare everyone down, and then these two fools just allow this chick to just beat her ass with a fucking crutch, right? That's essentially how the whole segment went down. Steve's been suspended before. How did we debut Steve back from a suspension? The parking lot, right? We do the whole parking lot deal. Car shows up, truck rolls in, something to indicate to the audience, oh, Steve's back. Steve comes out of the truck. He's walking that BMF walk to the building. I'm coming to fuck some shit up. Gets to about, I don't know, third of the way through the parking lot. We got security meeting him outside. Hey, look, we're here for I order events. You're not allowed in. You're on suspension. And before he could even finish his fucking sentence, Steve just opens up a can of whoop ass. Starts beating ass. He's throwing security guards in the walls. He's throwing him to the side of the truck. He's stomping a mud hole in these pricks. And then these BMFs walks right into the building. Camera shot follows his back going into the garage. We cut in. Steve makes a quick left. We cut in now. Camera's inside in the corridor. Pacing backwards, keeping an eye on Steve. Here comes some more security. Steve, wham! Steve, what? He starts beating ass. He comes down the corridor. Now the lower tier jobbers start coming in. Hey, Steve! And we got chairs. Boom, Kendo. He's beating ass, leaving bodies, a trail. Here we go now toward the gorilla position. Now the mid-card guys are trying to get the hell out of his way because they're not trying to get stomped up. He starts walking up the steps. Camera pans back to the building. Glass. Here he comes through the curtain. A BMF walk. Who's going to stop this guy? Not a fucking person, because they get stomped out too. He slides into the ring. Who the fuck has time for a stare down? It's time to beat some ass. Slide in. He just starts kicking, stomping, stunners. Everything's going fucking bonkers. The fucking locker room clears out. They come to the ring to try to get Steve off of this ass. But Steve's got something for him. Double fingers, stunners. Bam! Pass me a beer, Mark. He goes crazy. Building goes crazy. Everyone blows a load and goes home happy. That's a Stone Cold Steve Austin segment. That did not happen here. It should have. It should have. How crazy, right? So Becky gets her knee hurt, right? Becky gets her knee hurt at the house show. She's out. She's out of commission. She goes, she disappears. She's not around, okay? I don't know why that just did that. Always when I'm recording, does my laptop do stupid shit? What is this? How likely are you to recommend the Google Chrome web browser? Fuck Google Chrome and your web browser. I'm on a roll here. I'm trying to give an example about Becky Lynch and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Get the fuck out of here, Windows. I don't need your shit right now. Okay? So, we're back to Becky. Becky gets her knee hurt. She disappears. Charlotte comes to the ring. Ronda does the whole... Charlotte and Ronda do the whole deal, right? They're staring off at one another. A screen comes on. Here comes a car pulling up. Becky's coming out with the crutches. Right? Becky's coming out with the crutches. Everyone's trying to stop her. Hey, you're on suspension, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't want to do the whole beat-up deal, that's fine. You can have Becky just walk right on in. Who's going to stop her? No one. See, that's the beauty of being a female on the other side of it. As a guy, they'll just jump on top of you. As a female, you got to be really careful, right? PG era, we don't want to get sued or nothing. So she can use that shit to her advantage. Just plow right through everybody. You ain't even got to throw a punch. Just take your crutches and keep walking, keep walking, keep walking. And who's going to stop you? Nobody. This is me saving it now. So you get closer and closer. You turn that corridor. Becky, Charlotte and Ronda are looking up at the screen. This is bullshit. Ronda, if you really want to make her the baddest woman on the planet here, really want to, you want heat between these two people. Ronda, looking up at the screen, sees Becky Lynch. She's been doing this whole deal where she doesn't want to attack Becky because Becky's not exactly 100%. She wants her 100%. And Ronda, every step of the way, has been trying to convince her that this is not a good idea. So I have Ronda come out of the ring, start walking to the back like she's going to try to talk some sense into Becky. Becky's walking, 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 gets up to the gorilla. Becky's music hits. She comes through the curtain. Security's just behind her. Becky comes out first, but then they do that thing where security kind of comes out right behind them and then gets in between, like a wall, right? Like a wall securing between her and Ronda Rousey. Becky looks at security guards, looks at Ronda Rousey. Becky, all of a sudden, she starts going off. She's beating ass, beating security guards. Ronda the whole time is trying to convince Becky to stop. You're going to ruin WrestleMania. Here comes Charlotte from behind. Boom! Takes out her WrestleMania opponent. What does she care about Becky? Her focus should be on Ronda. Charlotte fucking up Ronda. Throwing into the guardrail. Boom. Becky's taking all the security guards out. Here comes Charlotte beating up on Ronda. Now that Becky's free from all the guards, here comes the crutch to the back of Charlotte. Bam! Right on the back. Charlotte sells. She's beating on Charlotte. Ronda goes to pull Becky off. Becky socks her. Bam. This pisses Ronda off. Ronda and Becky now in a brouhaha. Charlotte gets involved. These three chicks are beating each other. Locker room clears out. Gotta separate all three. How fucking great is this television? Because now you're putting us in a position where you kind of want to see the three of them fight. Because right now the audience doesn't want anything to do with Charlotte. Becky and Ronda is the focus. Right? So, let's get us all to a point where Charlotte has a reason, because right now she doesn't have a reason to be in this match. There's no fucking point to Charlotte being in this fucking match. None. But, if you put it all on a personal level, you have everybody fighting all one each other, you can make a reason for Charlotte to be in this match. Now it becomes a match that everyone wants to see. If you just solely put everything on Becky to carry this whole thing, it's not going to work because you introduced a second entity. If you're just doing Becky and Ronda, it would have worked. Becky could have carried this no problem. Do the whole deal of the anti-hero, Ronda being the baby face that nobody wants, baddest woman on the planet deal. You could have did that, but you're shoehorning Charlotte into this. So if you're going to shoehorn something, try to at least make it fit. If you're going to force a shoe on somebody, make sure the shoe is at least close to fitting. And you have that situation here. You have a situation where you could have jumped on this and made this a scenario where Charlotte means something in this match. Because the way that you did it is all about Becky again. It's all about Becky again. You're trying to make Becky a badass. Stop trying to make Becky a badass. Becky is either a badass or she's not. Which is one of the things about Steve. This is why I don't like the comparisons with Steve. Steve was a badass. Just in life. Just in general. He just exuded this badass quality. Either Becky's a badass or she isn't. If she is, then just let her be a badass. You don't need to try to make her seem like a badass. Just let her go. There are a million ways you could have did this. And this whole segment was just weird. And it just made everybody look so bad. And what makes it worse is the commentary team was killing it in the beginning. They were destroying the segment. Because the whole time Becky's walking through the crowd to get to the ring, commentary's screaming. Even Michael Cole, she's not supposed to be here. Where is the security? You shouldn't allow her to... There was no security all the way up until after Becky attacked. And then even then, they just stood there and stared at her. That's why I said they wouldn't touch her. Because they never touched her. Not until the end. And they never really... And you know what's so funny? The photo that's being passed around with Steve and with Becky, the still photo of them with their hands behind their back being arrested and yada, yada, yada. Becky was never arrested. They never put her hands behind her back. She put her hands behind her back. They were escorting her out of the building. She wasn't fucking arrested. It's not even the same fucking thing. But people are just trying to make that connection so hard. There's no connection there other than the organic rise. Becky was a mechanic. So was Steve. Becky had a level of popularity, but not overcoming. Not one of those popularities where it's just all-encompassing, right? So did Steve. Something happened along the way, a match, a promo, or something that jump-started them into the stratosphere. Steve had the Austin 316 situation. Becky had the match at SummerSlam where she finally turned on Charlotte. There's parallels there, but character-wise, gimmick-wise, there's nothing remotely close about the two of them. Nothing at all. Becky's calling herself the man, okay? She feels she's the best in the company, female or male. It doesn't matter. She feels she's the biggest draw. And yeah, that sounds like Steve. But here's a huge difference between Steve and Becky. Steve, behind the scenes... And this is important. Steve, behind the scenes, even though he was a mechanic, he had all the right people supporting him. Becky did not have that. Becky had her friends, but they saw her as a mechanic and nothing else. There was a plan in place for Steve to eventually get on top. That was never the case for Becky. So if anything, if you want to make comparisons to anybody... I mean, I can't think of a direct one, but it shouldn't be Steve. It shouldn't be Steve. Because once Steve really started getting over, then that was all the reason they needed. But the plan all along from the get was to put Steve somewhere near the top. The idea of coming from nothing, scraping to the top, all that stuff, it's great storyline, but it's not true. Steve had his support system in the back. It was on him to make himself a star. And he did. He made himself one of the biggest stars of all time. Becky didn't have that. And I think that's why people gravitate toward Becky, because of the four horse women, I think Becky was always looked at as the fourth. Always. She was the mechanic. She was the one you brought in there to make the new girl look good. Becky was the girl that everyone was beating every week. She's a good wrestler, but there's not really much more to her than that. That's it. And now she's completely taking over. People are comparing her to Steve because they feel that's the way with Steve. That's not the way with Steve. That's not the way that it was. Yes, it was his position to lose. Had he sucked or dropped the ball, he would have been gone. But he didn't suck. He didn't drop the ball. So he wasn't gone. And that's my point. Because Becky wasn't terrible. Becky was always good. Always good. And she always had her supporters. WWE just didn't see her that way. Until everyone made her. That is not what happened with Steve. WWE was well aware of what they had with Steve. It was just a matter of trying to find the vehicle in which to do it. So when the 316 promo happened, that was it. That was all they needed. It was off to the races after that. So no, I don't like that comparison with Steve. And this whole segment, I'm sorry, was, I think it hurt more than it helped. And that's not a good thing. You want your segments like this, especially since it's going to eventually try to be the WrestleMania main event. You're trying to make the first ever women's main event. And I don't think this was the way to do it. But they have time to do more stuff, so we'll see along the way. We still didn't get to the two Elimination Chamber matches. And the first one I'm going to talk about, obviously, is the women's tag team Elimination Chamber match. That is the teams of Carmella and Naomi, which had a dope entrance. I love that entrance. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, Nia Jax, Tamina, the Iconics, and the Riot Squad, and the eventual winners, Boston Hug Connection, Bayley and Sasha Banks. They would go on to win the tag team championship, and all I heard, more debates. See, I did a debate online about the whole Becky and Sasha, Stone Cold thing. That's why I'm bringing up all the shit that I talked about this week. So if you're not following me on social media, then it's probably a good thing because you'll probably be rehearing all this. But if you are not, then you're foolish and you should go and follow me right now. But this Elimination Chamber match, to me, was not bad. A lot of people were shitting on it. To me, it wasn't bad. The problem was is that I think the highlight of this entire match was the Iconics. Billy Kay and Peyton Royce have done nothing for me for weeks. But they stepped up huge in this particular match. I was completely invested in them and their progress in this matchup. The whole deal with the pod and keeping away from Team Facebreaker, which is what I'm calling them, not WWE. The whole deal with Nia Jax and the whole running bull deal, the spot that running into the chamber, that's been overdone so many times. And as soon as she hit that corner and started eyeing the pod, I just saw it coming. You can have your nitpicks, you can have your criticisms or whatever. But the one thing I want to talk about this match, the reason why I saved it for later, was the outcome. Boston Hug Connection here, Bayley and Sasha Banks. Listen, if you're really upset that they chose those two because of predictability, I really can't help you with life. I can't help you with life. That's not how that works. It's such a predictable win. Right. Okay, so your suggestion was to pick your pick. That's what it is. They didn't pick your pick. So it was a dumb pick, right? Is that what you're saying? Because if I picked the person, you know, because you're saying it's a predictable pick. Predictable doesn't mean bad. Predictable does not mean bad. You're starting a division. Okay? Now, the pick that I had on this show, I had Nia Jax and Tamina. And that was only because I felt like of the six teams, that might have been the weaker of the six teams. Because of the weak link, who got pinned in that matchup, by the way. Jax was not pinned. Tamina was. But then again, that's kind of how they've been using that team. Tamina takes, Jax gets all the wins, Tamina eats all the pinfalls. That's kind of been the formula for that tag team pretty much since it's been formed. But I felt that was the weaker of the 16 and their heels. I like starting off with heels. It gives the babyfaces something to chase. Babyfaces should always be chasing. Always be chasing. As often as possible. Eventually they win, they get a nice little run, yada, yada, yada. But the money's in the chase. That's Wrestling 101. So to put it on two baby faces, I get it to a degree. Wrestling-wise, maybe not the best decision, but business-wise, an excellent decision, and I'll explain to you why. They're two of the best performers in the entire company. male or female. There are men who can't outwork Bayley and Sasha. It's just a fact. And now you have a tag team title that's going to be defended on both brands. Bayley and Sasha will be on both brands now, defending the WWE Women's Champion, Women's Tag Team Championship. You need a team solid enough to be able to work with everyone. Bayley and Sasha can completely 100% do that. So it makes sense. You want to build these titles up. You want to do the opposite of what they did with the Universal title, essentially. You want to build these belts up to mean something. And now you've got two workers in there who can do just that. They can give rematches. I would love to see. Think about this. Bayley and Sasha versus Carmella and Naomi one-on-one. Bayley and Sasha versus Mandy Rose and DeVille. Bayley and Sasha versus Nia Jax and Tamina. Bayley and Sasha versus the Iconics. Bayley and Sasha versus the Riot Squad. 2-on-2 action I'm talking about. These matches can roll on any card, anywhere. They're universal. They're pieces to the puzzle here. And I'm super excited about what they're going to do with this division. Because the problem with having a division is that you have to make teams. They rush some of these teams along to get it ready for the division. But over time, as you progress, you can really, really make actual teams. You can start. There's a lot of women in NXT right now that you can start meshing together and making them fluid teams. And really putting an effort into building not just contenders, but just an overall division. You don't want to just build teams to feed to the champions. You need an actual division. This is always the problem I had with the women's division. You know, you got one championship. Now you have two. But at the time, it was one championship and eight divas. So who would be on TV all the time? Two divas, because there's only one champion and one contender. And for some reason, they just couldn't figure out what to do with the rest of them. Now you have something to do with the rest of them. Start tagging them up. Start tagging them up. You can put them in two different divisions. You can have a singles division. You can have tag team division. Just like you do with the guys. So it's going to take time. It's going to take effort. But I'm looking forward to it. And now that leads us to the WWE Championship match inside the Elimination Chamber here. The competitors, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, and Samoa Joe. And of course, the defending champion, starter of the chamber, and eventual winner, Daniel Bryan, Captain Planet himself. This was not a bad match. I actually like this match a lot. But and I want you to hear me when I say this out loud. I liked this match, but it was a terrible Elimination Chamber match. They're all terrible Elimination Chamber matches. There is almost no usage of the chamber. I said the same thing for Hell in a Cell. The ladder match might be the only gimmick match where the gimmick is heavily involved. Everything else, it just seems like if you would have eliminated the Elimination Chamber, that's a mouthful, but if you take away the chamber and you have these six guys just competing in the ring, that match would have been even better, I think, than it was. And it was not a bad match. They used it for a couple of high spots, a sick-ass Swanton spot on AJ Styles that was really good. There was some good heel work from Daniel Bryan. He essentially, that caged, even in the women's match, in my opinion, because I think Bliss wasn't in that match. There were a few times when the Iconics did it, where the chamber seemed to be used more for evading and escape than for offense. The heels really used the fuck out of that chamber and really used the opportunity to get away more times than actual damage, like throwing him into the cage or into the chain or bumping them on the outside of the ring or whatever. It always seemed like there was another nefarious use. So, dope match. Shitty chamber match. I really do wish these six guys would have been outside of the cage. I really do. I really don't see a purpose or a point to them doing these gimmick matches anymore, especially since you're doing them for a selling point. You're selling the idea that it's dangerous. 2 miles of chains, all that stuff they used to do in all those commercials and whatnot. So I really don't know. I don't understand at all. But it wasn't a bad match. So now that I'm bringing it up, you know we have to discuss one more piece of the puzzle here in that matchup, and that's the man. That's Kofi Kingston, the man that everyone is talking about. We've got to talk Kofi Kingston, and I will. In just a few minutes, I will. But real quick, I'm going to throw this little commercial out for you guys because I think you guys need to hear this. in over 15 countries, over several thousands of downloads. Orsini's Uncensored Mind is flying right straight through the stratosphere. It is growing every single day. And of course, you can catch the weekly releases every week, every Wednesday, 9 p.m. by going to ajoum.podbean.com. But if you cannot reach us there, there are many other platforms in which you can catch the show. You can check us out on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Listen Notes, CastBox.fm. If you have any of those services, you can catch Orsini's Uncensored Mind. Again, every Wednesday, 9 p.m., become a member of the Squad of O. It's a pretty cool group of people, and it's a pretty awesome show to listen to. And I would know because I host a show. I really need you guys to listen. Check us out. So here's the deal. I just played that for you guys just real quick because I get asked all the time about the platforms. So there's the platforms right there for you if you guys are unable to listen on just Podbean. I know Podbean can be a bit of a pain in the ass sometimes. But so for those of you who have trouble with that, there you go, other platforms. So, Elimination Chamber. Let's talk a little bit about the man. You know which man I'm talking about right here, baby. We're talking about this guy.
SOS. Are you the chosen?
Boom, boom, boom.
SOS. Are you the brilliant? I'm calling you. You're
walking in a bad man, please. I missed this song. The song was dope. It's funny. WWE is just considered black, black man. This guy is from Ghana and they gave him a Jamaican gimmick. Whatever, dude. It's whatever. It's like being a Chinese guy and they give you like a Taiwanese gimmick. He's not from Taiwan. Alright, well, fuck it then. He's coming to the ring with chopsticks regardless. So I don't know why you guys are fucking beefing anyway. The WWE Championship was on the line. And yes, I know a lot of people were rooting for the man. But he could not pull it off. He did not win the WWE Championship yet again. And this is one of my biggest arguments I've had online. I love Kofi Kingston. I've loved him for a long time. He's a fantastic athlete. He may go down as one of the best athletes they have ever had in the WWE. He is a four-time Intercontinental Champion, three-time United States Champion. That's seven titles for individual singles competition. He has won five tag team titles on Raw with partners in Air Boom, Evan Bourne, R-Truth, and of course The New Day and CM Punk. He's won three SmackDown titles as with The New Day. He's tied third all-time with 12 consecutive Royal Rumble appearances. That's huge for him because he's a big Royal Rumble guy. The guy, Brady. Kofi Kingston's lasting legacy will be the Royal Rumble. He's changed the game forever. He's changed the way eliminations take place forever. Now everyone in every Rumble has to come up with a unique and creative way to not be eliminated in the Royal Rumble. He started that. Of course, he made his debut on television in 2007. That's why they made the crack on TV about 12 years. And Big E tried to correct the guy because he has been contracted since 2005. But he did a developmental deal, then he went to ECW. But he made his main brand in 2007. Right? So these are all wonderful statistics here for Kofi Kingston, and I've been saying it for forever. He has achieved quite a bit. He is a hell of a performer. He is not a world champion. I have been saying that for forever. People are disagreeing very vehemently with me, and that is fine. We don't need to all agree on this. I just know that I'm right because they've never put the belt on him. That's the winning argument I have every time. They've had a chance at least once a year his entire time he's been here to at least put him in that position to compete. They tried it once. We all know how that went. And there really hasn't been many other attempts to really push him into that upper echelon. He has been treated like a mid-card guy for forever. As a matter of fact, an upper echelon top mid-card guy, which is not a bad position to be. Some of our favorite performers of all time were pigeonholed and pegged into that slot. It shouldn't be anything that's considered disrespectful at all. There's nothing wrong with being mid-card, especially if you're going to be a secure one for the WWE. But for those who want to achieve more, there's always the opportunity to compete for the WWE or WWE World Heavyweight or WWE Universal Championship, all championships that he qualified for. He even had a real legitimate shot. You can make an argument he could have been ECW champion, but they never did it. They never put him in that position. So we're going to talk a little bit about Kofi Kingston right now, just a little bit. We're going to run some numbers here, and we're going to talk years here in the WWE, and I'm going to ask you the question, at what point would it have made sense? Okay? Because, again, this is an argument that I've been having, and this time, instead of just coming off the top of my head, I actually have some facts here that I would like to ask you. Okay? I'd like to ask you some questions involving some facts here, and I really want you to consider the things that I'm going to discuss with you right now before you go off on this bandwagon about why this guy should become the WWE champion. First and foremost, the whole black deal. I just did this last episode. The Rock is the first ever and only WWE champion that is African-American. Period. End the discussion. We're not going down that road again. You have a black champion. His name is The Rock. Okay? You need to start wrapping your head around that. Public opinion does not dictate ethnicity. I've said this 1,000 times. He has a black father. He has black family members. He's a black man. That's it. I don't give a shit. He doesn't walk around with a fucking Malcolm X patch on or an afro or all that other garbage. He's a black fucking guy. Just because he doesn't advocate it as much as his Samoan does not mean that he discredits that within himself. I think he's confident and fine with the fact that he is half black and half Samoan. Okay? So we're past that. Let's get to Kofi, because that's what everyone seems to be putting it on now. Everyone wants the first black champion to be Kofi Kingston. So let's divvy into this right now. So again, he made his television debut December 2007. Now, the argument online has been he should be the first black WWE champion. Because if you want to talk about world champions, we've had plenty of black guys, but no one seems to be counting that. The World Heavyweight Championship, nobody seems to count. The Universal Championship hasn't had a black guy just yet. As a matter of fact, it was a statistic that went around that there hasn't been a black guy to compete for the championship, let alone win it. So that's a whole other bag for a whole other day. But the sole focus seems to be on just the WWE Championship. So, for every year that Kofi has been eligible to compete, meaning he's on the main brand to compete for the WWE Championship, okay, let's go down the list here. He made his debut December of 2007. Who was the champion? Who was the WWE champion when he made his debut? Randy Orton was the champion when he was making his debut. Now, obviously, the first year is going to be tough. You're breaking again enough of developmental. First year, maybe two, is going to be tough, but I'm going to run them down anyway. So, December 2007. So, let's just talk about 2008 here. The WWE champions in 2008, I have it right here. Randy Orton, who lost it to Triple H, who lost it to Edge. Those are your three WWE champions for pretty much the whole year. Those are your WWE champions. Should Kofi Kingston have been champion instead of them? Obviously not. Let's X out 2008. 2009. Edge walked in as the world as the WWE champion. He lost the belt to Jeff Hardy, who lost it back to Edge, who lost it to Triple H, who lost it to Batista, who lost it to Randy Orton, who lost it to John Cena, who lost it back to Randy, back to John, and then we ended the year with Sheamus. Now, should he have gotten it over 2009 Jeff Hardy? Obviously not. There wasn't a hotter wrestler on the planet than Jeff Hardy. Edge? Nope. Triple H? Nope. Batista at this time, 2009. Made Man? Nope. Randy Orton going through full Viper mode here. Apex Predator? Absolutely not. Cena? Nope. Here, I have a star here. Sheamus, December 2009. So, let's talk about that little section right there, because if you want to be fair about it, if you want to be fair, that might have been the one gap. That's the one section in all this where perhaps this could have worked with Kofi Kingston. Now, if I'm not mistaken, 2009, right? So this whole deal with 2009 here, I'm trying to look this up now. I should have grabbed this beforehand because I wrote all these notes down, but I am noticing that I missed this here. Okay, so puts through a table, 2000, when the hell did this happen? When did that – did it happen in 2009? Kofi and the Randy Orton deal where he leg dropped him through a table, biggest moment of his career to date. Okay, I'm trying to get this date right here. I know it was in 2009. I'm just trying to get an exact time period here of when this took place. Stop loading because you're taking too long. And I cannot find the date right now at the moment. All right, well, that's fine. Well, the point is it happened in 2009. I know that for sure. And I know that it happened in 2009. This is when Randy was really going through his whole deal here. So, if you want to make an argument in 2009, you have a strong one. Because Sheamus was an experiment. Sheamus was a guess. They pushed him to the moon. He debuted actually after Kofi. He only debuted a few months before that when he won the WWE Championship. But there was the whole deal. He's the workout buddy of Triple H. He really had the right people behind him, backing him, yada, yada, yada. He felt like a world champion. He looked like a world champion. He wrestled like a world champion. He was not a very good world champion. He didn't hold that championship for very long either. Right? So Sheamus, if you want to say, was Kofi a better contender or a better guess or a better, should have been given that opportunity more than Sheamus, I actually might buy into that. So here we go. 2009, there's just one spot here. It would have been 2 years from his debut. That was definitely enough time. He did a few things back in the day here. 2008, here we go. I forgot this part here. Let's talk about this real quick. May 26, 2008, Kofi Kingston gets drafted to Raw, from ECW to Raw, supplemental draft. He beats Chris Jericho on his debut on Raw for the Intercontinental Championship. So this is just right here. This is right before all this stuff went down. They were already kind of building him up. He was winning IC titles. He was winning US titles. They were already kind of behind him. So if you want to make the argument that he should have been given the chance above Sheamus, I'll buy in. Let's go to 2010. All right, because after Sheamus, he loses the belt to Cena. So 2010, Cena, Batista, Cena, Sheamus again, Randy, and The Miz. So we're back to Sheamus again. Obviously not Cena, Batista, and then Cena there. We're going through that whole deal or whatever. Sheamus, the second time around. How'd that work out for him the second time around? Also garbage. All of his WWE Championship reigns were garbage. The only good reign that he had was the World Heavyweight Championship one, and even that one's kind of sketchy. But as WWE champion, he wasn't a very good WWE champion. If you didn't give it to Kofi the first time, I can make an even stronger argument he should have won it the second, 2010. Now, 2010, if I'm not mistaken, is when they were running. He was in and out of tag teams, winning singles gold. You could have, and again, the Sheamus run here. Maybe you do it here. Maybe this is where you take the chance and see what you can get out of him. The point here is that it should have happened early. Because then you could have gotten time out of him. You could have made him a major player. Randy Orton, obviously not Miz. Now, Miz is a hard pill to swallow for a lot of reasons. That was also the slot punk said that he should have been in. He was doing the whole Straight Edge Society deal as a heel. I know Kofi's coming in as a babyface in this conversation. But remember, there was a time period. As a matter of fact, it was during this time period, 08, 09, 2010, even 2011, where it was almost inconceivable that Kofi could be a heel because he was such a good baby. So there's no way that Miz would have been able to take that spot. I don't think Miz should have had it either, to be honest with you, but I do believe that Kofi definitely, that wasn't the right spot for Kofi. It looks to me like they were looking to try out a new heel, get a new heel over, which is probably why Punk wanted that spot so bad, because he felt he was the better heel. So that wouldn't have worked. But 2009 and 2010 both have gaps. The Sheamus runs, where you could have plugged him in. Could have been an option. Could have been a safer bet. They took a risk. They gambled on Sheamus. And I don't think they crapped out. They got a lot out of him. But as far as a WWE champion, they really didn't. I don't think they got what they wanted out of that. So 2011 now. All right, 2011, you figure Kofi's hitting his stride, right? Here we go. Cena, Punk, Mysterio. Now, that was when Mysterio won that title after Punk left. Cena beating Mysterio that same night, and then Punk winning at SummerSlam. Del Rio, Cena, Punk. So, obviously not Cena. Punk, you know, between Kofi and Punk, obviously Punk is the better performer. Especially in 2011, he was white hot. That pipe bomb promo put him way over the top, so that's a no-go. Mysterio, that was a Lifetime Achievement Award type deal that would only lasted like, what, an hour, 2 hours? It lasted an episode of Raw, essentially, because he won the championship and then put it right back up against Cena and then lost. So Not there. Obviously not Cena. Cena Punk was the money match, especially after Money in the Bank. Punk winning it back, then losing to Del Rio. Del Rio would be the cash-in. So if you want to make the argument that Kofi should have won Money in the Bank in 2011, because that's how that happened. Del Rio got in because of the Money in the Bank. So if you want to tell me, hey, would Kofi would have been a better choice in 2011 for the Money in the Bank winner? Maybe. Maybe he could have been, but I don't think Del Rio was the wrong choice. They were trying to get into another market. They were trying to bring in the Latino viewer. Mysterio was kind of on his way out. This is broken knee, blown out knee, Mysterio. They were trying to replace him with somebody. Del Rio was an obvious choice for that. So if you want to make an argument for Del Rio, perhaps I'll put a star there, because that's debatable. You can go back and forth. Kofi was a bigger commodity at the time. Again, it was a guess on whether or not Del Rio would work. Long term, if you think about it, Del Rio does kind of look like the bad choice now, because he seemed like a short-term solution. He was only around strong for another year or two, and Kofi's still going today. So if you want to make the argument for Del Rio in 2011, you can make an argument there. Cena Punk toward the end of the year, obviously not. Punk would win the WWE Championship November of 2011 and start that historic 434-day reign. So we skip 2012, because think about it in all honesty. Punk's reign in 2012, would it have made sense for Kofi to beat him for the championship at any point in time in 2012? No. So we're just going to move on. 2013 now, right? We go to 2013. Obviously, Rock takes the belt from Punk in February. Rock, Cena, Brian Orton. That's the order. And of course, Brian Orton knows we're all garbage title changes at the end of the year. We're stripping this and vacating this and yada, yada, yada. Big storyline between Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan, just to get Daniel Bryan over. Now, Kofi Kingston beating The Rock for the championship at WrestleMania? Obviously not. Is he beating Cena? Obviously not. Bryan, as over as he was, yes, movement. Who was a better commodity, Daniel Bryan or Kofi Kingston? That's an easy one, Daniel Bryan. Okay, that's an easy one, going back and forth. Orton being in the mix, I guess they just went with a veteran heel, try to help boost the credibility of Daniel Bryan a little bit, so we move forward. 2014, Daniel Bryan, and then the injury happened, Cena, and then Lesnar, as WWE champions. Kofi beating any of those guys? No. 2015 began the era of the Shield. So we have 2015 Rollins obviously winning at WrestleMania. Sheamus reigns again. No good things come from Sheamus being the WWE champion. I'll put another star there. If you really wanted to add a little something extra to the main event scene at that point, infiltrating Sheamus back in for zero reason, because it was a shock. That was a shock win for everyone. That was not a good call at all. As a matter of fact, that hurt his stock even more than the other two. He got relegated to tag team division after that. And I'm not saying relegated like it's a bad thing to be a tag team. I'm just saying you go from being WWE champion to just being in a tag team with another guy who can't seem to get over the hump. That's not good. So I will put a star there, because if you're really trying to shake shit up in the main event scene, that could have been an opportunity there as well. Basically, all of Sheamus' title reigns should have gone to Kofi Kingston, now that I'm doing this out loud. Rollins, Sheamus reigns. That was 2015. All right, so if you want to make an argument about that, you can make that argument about that. Rollins and Reigns, obviously, are the two guys they were really looking at. 2016, Triple H, Reigns, Rollins, Ambrose, Styles. That's how that goes. So, Kofi over Triple H? Obviously not. Kofi over Reigns? No. Kofi over Rollins? I know this is following the big run. In 2015, but that Rollins thing. Remember, it was that one night where the Shield all were WWE champion on the same night. So it was like Reigns came in as champion, Rollins beat him, and then Ambrose cashed in. So all three members of the Shield were WWE champion all in one night. And then you have the Styles victory at the end. Okay, I'm going to put an asterisk next to the Styles one, and here's why. If you want to make the argument that maybe Styles got it too soon, that's where that could fit in. Again, it's another opportunity, because it looks like they were looking for a different face in the main event. That's why they put Styles in. Styles and Kofi, very similar in style. Styles, I think, is the better, stronger in-ring performer, but not by much. And I actually think Kofi's a better promo. Even now, AJ's a better promo, but he's not a really good promo. Kofi's still a better promo. So, I mean, Kofi's been there for years. Up until this point, what is this, 2016? So, at this point, he's been there for 9 years, hasn't got a sniff. I probably would be okay with pulling the trigger here. Here's an even bigger reason why I think it would have been a much better reason to pull the trigger here for Styles. Because Styles was eventually just fed to Cena for the 16th world title. I don't think Styles needed... Now, granted, the match itself, the Royal Rumble match with Styles and Cena was dope. It was off the hook. It was a great fucking match. But I don't think Styles needed to eat that loss. If you think about it, because the person that Styles got it from was Ambrose. If you shocked the world, right? You shocked the world here with Kofi and Ambrose. Besides, that's the one... Ambrose has one title reign, and it doesn't seem like anybody was that enamored with it in the first place. So why not use that title reign to boost up another guy, to get another face into the picture? You get Kofi set up for about 2 months, and then you just have him drop the belt to John Cena. John Cena goes in there and makes Kofi look like $1 million. You can write off the title reign. It's kind of like, okay, well, they gave it a shot type deal, and then you can now implement him in other main event matches down the line when needed, because now he's a former WWE champion. You could have got mileage out of that, is what I'm saying. Styles, eventually, we're going to get to that next, I believe. Yeah, 2017. Let's get to 2017. Cena takes the belt from Styles at Royal Rumble. So Cena, Wyatt, Orton, Mahal, and Styles. So back to the Styles in 2016. If that's Kofi instead of Styles, you have him end that reign from Ambrose. You get at least one or two matches out of that, Kofi and Ambrose, which isn't... It's not terrible. Is it a WWE Championship feud? I don't know. You can tell a better story if you want to. But they're not terrible matches. But then we go from Kofi to Cena. Cena and Kofi have always had great chemistry. I don't know why, but they just always seem to find each other out there. So that would have been dope. Here's where it gets dicey, because you go from Kofi to Cena. Kofi drops the belt to Cena at the Royal Rumble. Cena was losing the belt at the Elimination Chamber anyway to Wyatt. Bray Wyatt, who was another guest. This was another opportunity here for a new superstar, for a new main eventer to come in and try to build that up. Let's say, for instance, Kofi loses the belt to Cena at the Royal Rumble, and then let's say Kofi gets it back at the Elimination Chamber, right? As opposed to Orton winning at the Elimination Chamber. You could have did a whole deal, because we're still trying to get to Wyatt Orton, right? You could have did a whole deal where Kofi loses the belt to Cena at the Royal Rumble, Cena loses it to Wyatt at the Elimination Chamber, and implemented Kofi into this Wyatt Orton situation. You could have, because the whole deal was Orton didn't really turn on Wyatt until well after the Chamber. Well after. Orton won the Royal Rumble, and then it just kind of laid in the air for a minute that any of this was going to happen. You could implement the idea of Kofi wanting his championship back, Wyatt focusing on Kofi, only to leave himself open and vulnerable to an attack to Orton. Now, Kofi doesn't need to win a second title, but it puts him in the main event picture while Wyatt goes over on Kofi and retains. It gives Wyatt a defense, makes his title reign a little bit more solid, because his title reign was garbage leading up to WrestleMania. Right, but it gives him a solid win because he just beat a former champion clean, right? And then he leads into Orton at WrestleMania. Makes Wyatt look a little bit stronger now because he's got some defenses under his belt. And eventually drops to Orton because fuck it, right? Because fuck life. Why did Orton need to be champion? Who fucking knows? Maybe for the next one. Because then Orton drops it to fucking... who did Orton drop it to again? Yeah. Yes, he dropped it to Mahal, right? So Orton drops it to Mahal here, and then we have, what was it, 6 or 7 month reign for Mahal, and he eventually drops to Styles. And then Styles starts the big 1 year run, and now he loses it to our current champion, Bryan. So that's where we are right now. So I just going over the champions at the time, all right? Because, and don't sit there and say, well, he should have got it instead of Mahal. False, not true. Mahal was a good guess. Just like Wyatt was a good guess. Just like Sheamus was a good guess. They had the look that they wanted. They looked like wrestlers. They looked like champions. Well-spoken people. International stars. Well, not Wyatt.
But, you know, Sheamus comes from another country. He comes from Ireland. Mahal technically comes from Canada, but he's proud of his Indian heritage. So that's kind of a twofer right there with Mahal. They needed a badass heel in Sheamus. They needed a badass heel in Mahal. They needed a badass heel in Wyatt. Kofi does not fit that bill. So I don't know if he's taking their spots per se, but he very well could have taken Sheamus's. He could have been influenced and he could have been intertwined into the Wyatt deal. If anything, just to give him that run in between to be fed to Cena. Mahal needed to try something. And they landed on Mahal. That's fine. I liked Mahal's title reign. I think it was refreshing to get an actual heel champion that was a genuine heel for once. But again, that leaves Kofi out. Right? And then, of course, the whole Daniel Bryan deal here. So that's one. I have one star here for the Styles run. I have three for the Sheamus runs. One for the Punk run. So that's five. All right? So I will give the critics this. Based on everything I just ran down, I will give the critics this. Five opportunities, with at least minimum five. Because obviously there's more. You can infiltrate different storylines with him. There were different opportunities. There was drafts that took place. He was moving back and forth to different brands. So there's times where he was on a brand that didn't have the WWE Championship. But the point is you could have implemented him in all these different spots. You could have. They didn't. That's my point to all this. They could have. There were plenty of opportunities where it could have gone either way. It could have been 50-50. He could have been in instead of Sheamus, but he wasn't. Sheamus was. He could have been in instead of Del Rio, but he wasn't. Del Rio was. He could have been in instead of Styles, but he wasn't. Styles was. That's my point about this guy. They don't see him as a world champion. They don't book him like a world champion. Thus, in fact, I don't take him as a world champion. This is not hard to figure out. I ran these names down today, but I've been arguing this shit all week. Now I have a reason to feel the way that I feel. Look here. This is the way that I feel here. Bam. Because it is reason. You guys get it now? This is what I'm saying. This is the way that he's been booked this whole time, as opposed to the way that these other guys have been booked. They were all main eventers. Even in situations where they took time to try to make a new one, it was always surrounded. Above and below Sheamus is Cena. Above and below Del Rio was Punk and Cena. Above and below the other Sheamus ring. Where's the other Sheamus ring? Cena and Randy, right? Here's the one I said earlier about Styles. Maybe it could have been Styles. Above him was Ambrose and Cena. These were all situations of protection. You give that protection to Kofi, maybe you get something out of him, maybe you don't. But the point is they never felt enticed enough to try. That's the point. So that's the whole deal about Kofi Kingston. I had to get that shit off my chest. There was one other topic I wanted to talk about, but I actually don't really feel like talking about it because that's the one topic that I got so wrapped up about that it just took me to a whole nother fucking level, and I'm pretty much done talking about it. If you didn't get a chance to hear my take on the whole Corey Graves deal, it's fine. Head over to my Facebook. There's a status there. It basically just says that he gave away he gave away his family for some side shit. That's basically what the status says. Hashtag sad. The whole argument is in there. All right. I don't really feel like going over it right now. I really don't. It's too much. It's taxing. It's frustrating. I'm not really into it anymore, to be honest with you, because it involves other people's fucking shit. And to be honest with you, I don't let other people's shit incorporate more time than it needs to. I know that I'm a show host, and these are the type of topics that all the shows are going to be talking about. I'm not that type of show, guys. I don't sit here. I don't need to piggyback off for other people's shit. I was more interested, to be honest with you, to discuss Kofi Kingston than I was Corey Graves, because Corey Graves is a piece of shit, and I'm pretty much done discussing him. His situation is what his situation is. I feel bad for his kids. I feel bad for the wife. To a degree, I feel bad for him, because this whole situation, I'm sure, is stressing him the fuck out. But to be honest with you, he created the situation, so fuck him. That's it. He created the situation, so fuck him. I don't give a fuck how long they've been separated. I don't give a fuck about any of the information. The only piece of information I need to know: are you married? Yes. Did the divorce go through yet? No. Then I don't need to hear anything else. Scumbag. End of conversation. That's it. Scumbag. End of conversation. I'm done. So there's obviously more to that. I'm not trying to be that dismissive and simplistic about the situation. There's obviously more, but you can go and you can read up on that. I'm not doing that shit here again. So That's going to be it for episode 77. I got through a lot of shit here, actually. I have so much more to talk about, but I don't want to drone on. It's already, I'm already over the hour, so. Anywho, for those of you who did not get a chance to hear the commercial, there are different platforms, guys. Actually, I have another country that I've listened to the show, so if you're listening to the show out in Turkey, the country of Turkey, yes, they are listening to the show now, and I could not be happier about that, so. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for sharing. Thank you guys for downloading. And of course, what did I just do there? Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for downloading. Thank you guys for sharing. There you go. And of course, thank you guys for enjoying episode 77.
Hey, my house. Listen to my daddy's soul. Listen to the SMI.